All right. Welcome to another episode of Talking Cloud. How are you today?
Hello. Good.
Good. All set for the weekend? I'm good.
Absolutely.
Good. The sun's shining today, which is like the first time in almost a week. Right? You'd think we were on the West Coast instead of the East Coast, the way the weather's been.
No kidding.
Yeah. Not been good. Been good. So do you have any plans for the weekend? Anything on the watch list?
Let's
I'm putting
see.
You on the spot.
You are putting me on the spot here.
Just popped into my head. Usually Friday is movie recommendation day.
That is true. That is true. We've been getting I don't know. Oh, there's a movie called Prospect I wanted to watch, actually.
Prospect?
What's his name? From the Nicolas Cage movie. Pedro Pascal.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Speaking of Nicolas Cage movies, I'm waiting for the latest one where I can't remember the name of it. I'm waiting for it to come out on like a streaming service of some sort or whatever, where he, is it something about his dreams start coming?
Oh, we watched that.
Is it worth my time?
I think so. It's a very strange movie. It's called Dream Scenario.
Dream Scenario. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's kind of the theme of all of his movies lately is they're interesting stories. So I'll wait for it to come out and we'll watch it. All right, let's flip over here to the articles that we've come across this week. Have you ever seen the Datadog Security Labs website before? Have you ever stumbled across this before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. An article comes up in a feed somewhere or whatever, and I go and I read it, and it always reminds me, this is a great resource. Like, there's lots of really good stuff here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed a couple times I've really enjoyed it. So this article came up last week. And, ECS is the new EC2 for crypto mining. Okay, that's great. But, it's a good read. I really enjoyed looking through this. But what I thought, and I've looked at a couple other security-related articles from them, and what I really enjoy about this is they're highlighting CloudTrail events and sort of like taking the perspective of why would somebody, who's maybe acting not in your best interest, why might you be seeing these API calls in your CloudTrail event log? So I really enjoyed this. I think this is, you could use this to generate alerts off of and things like that if you wanted to understand what's happening a little more in your accounts.
Yeah, it's a good forensic look at kind of how these bad actors behave in your cloud environments. So well worth looking at for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then there was something else that popped out at me here that I thought was interesting. Yeah, here's kind of the same thing. Maybe it was just this other table. So up here, we're looking at sort of first activity observed. What were they doing? And then down here, sort of enumeration and, getting data out of the environments. What were they doing? Trying to run EC2 instances. So all these things are really great for kind of helping you understand what's happening in your account. Yeah. And this one here has got to be my favorite. How many times have we reviewed an AWS account and 95% of all the security groups have a rule that looks like this in it?
They had a big problem with this a few years ago, I think, where people were hacking into publicly accessible EC2 instances and mining on them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
brutal. The one thing go ahead.
I was just saying that's a big vector, right?
Yeah. I think the one thing you could do if you wanted to improve the security of your account, I don't want to say easily, because if you have these types of rules, most likely somebody is using them, but getting that list of all of the security groups that have open access on a port, right? Now 80443 might be okay depending on the destination of that traffic, but just getting that report to show you what's open could probably give you some good insight into what's been configured in your account and maybe identify some things that you could probably plug up pretty quickly,
right? For sure.
That should be high on your to-do list. So I really like this this article. I thought it was really insightful. And even the little mind maps that they drew to kind of help you visualize it, like really good article. Good article. So that's the first one on my list today, right? Thought it was neat. The next thing, I'm going to come back to, let's talk about local zone. So local zones, obviously for specific use cases really good. And the fact that, you know, I guess the way I always think about this is basically reducing the latency associated with the services that you're delivering and getting closer to your customers. So moving from sort of what I'll call regional or AZ computing to running your resources in a local zone. Interesting that I think there was another announcement maybe a week or two ago about some additional local zones. So Amazon continues to build out this global infrastructure.
Yeah. They're expanding their data centers. I thought this was particularly interesting if you happen to be in Chicago. I know there's a big stock exchange situation there with futures trading, I think.
Okay.
So if you're in that business, you might be interested. But yeah, if you need any kind of lower latency, then this is the kind of thing you would be looking for.
Yeah. And this here, you know, again, if you're kind of wondering what type of workloads might warrant this type of lower latency, I do like this. Amazon often will give you sort of some sample use cases to at least start thinking about it, right? But I like your idea too of you know, just that in the finance space, obviously those latency is going to be super important, right?
Yeah. I know there's a lot of big video game servers in Chicago as well.
Oh, okay.
I know Riot Games has a server there. Yeah. There's a few others too, I'm pretty sure. So, okay. Yeah.
Well, that's probably where I run all my big video game servers. Like,
right. Yeah.
The ultra popular Minecraft server and stuff. I'll put it in the local zone there because I need ultra low latency. So
you got to get the low latency Minecraft. Yeah.
I don't get exploded by a creeper. Actually, most times I die to my nephew hurling something at me while I'm not watching.
Sounds about right.
My most common death scenario in Minecraft. So, yeah, this is good, right? Low latency is good. You always got to protect yourself. Here's a good one. Come on, Zoom. There we go. Let's try to get that in a recent certification retirements and launches. So Amazon is retiring the certified data analytics specialty, the certified database specialty, and the SAP on AWS specialty.
Okay.
I thought this was funny. There's a lot of controversy about this. People are kind of losing their shit a little bit about this. Yeah, it's if you kind of hang around in the certification and training circles, or you've got a few people on your Twitter list or something like that. I guess your X list now, which sounds weird.
Yeah.
People are kind of upset about this, was my take on it. I'm happy to see the SAP on AWS specialty go, because to be honest, it kicked my ass twice. And I was like, yeah, okay, I know when I'm beaten, I'm going to go and spend some time on some other stuff. And the other thing, selfishly, I think when these go away,
yeah,
I can say that I have all the certs.
You have them all?
No, I get all the certs by default.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. The SAP one was the last one on my list if I wanted to have all the certs. And when it kicked my butt twice, I kind of was like, do I really even care? I'm going to go and do something else with my time. That's maybe not a great attitude, but that was the way I approached it.
Well, it's not one that we typically encounter very often, right? I'm just thinking what. Yeah, I guess if those go away, the only ones I would be missing are data analytics.
I've heard that they're bringing another associate level cert.
Okay.
So guess, watching people kind of lose their minds a little bit about this, the take on it seems to be that, and pure speculation, obviously, that maybe AWS is going away from these kind of specialty certs that are focused on something specific, and then more sort of generalized. I don't know. Who knows? I guess the other cert that they retired was the Echo cert. I won't say the other word because I have one on my desk. But I think they retired that one a couple of years ago now. Yeah. I don't even know if that, did it ever make it out of beta?
Well, I got the first one.
Did you?
Whenever it was.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I took a run at the beta, and because you could do the betas for free, and I passed the beta, and I wasn't sure if it ever made it into sort of version one or not.
I think they did one.
Did they do one exam?
And then discontinued it.
My cynical view on this is just you didn't have enough people taking the exam. So I can imagine the effort that it must take for certification and training folks to keep all these things up to date and stuff. So I'm sure there's some sort of business decision-making process going on behind the scenes too. Just the effort, the work effort to keep them all up to date. If they're not
probably
as popular as they thought they would be, then based on the data that they get, they just retire and create new stuff. So anyways, you know, if people were saying, well, why would I get it before April when it retires just to say that I had it? Because people are like, well, it's valid for 3 years. Okay. I don't know. So this one caught my eye last week, and just because a lot of people were having fun with it. Let's see. I shared this with you the other day. I won't zoom in on this. I don't know what to say about this. I found this in a social feed somewhere, and because it's the CEO, I decided to watch it. And you know my take on this. I said to you, it sounded like alphabet soup to me. Let's just say as many models as we can, and let's say as many buzzwords as we can. I think I kind of see why they're doing it, but I don't know. It seemed weird to me.
My read on it is that for a lot of these systems, if you want it to do a certain specific task or fill a niche role in your system, your business, whatever, it takes a lot of training and selecting the right model.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So going deep on one of them doesn't make as much sense as going kind of broader and allowing people to bring their own. So they're just going for the scattershot approach, right? Let's try and make everything available.
Yeah. So if I'm understanding what you're saying is Amazon's approach here is let's make sure that we have all the models available, because there's going to be a lot of experimentation that folks are going to have to do to find the right model. And if we can provide all of them, then the likelihood is that you will end up using our platform for this.
Exactly. And there's no clear winner yet, right? So it's all this tech is 2 years old. So,
And would there ever be a clear winner? I don't think, like, my limited knowledge of it at this point, right? Because it's so new. I don't know if there'd ever be a real, like, when you say a winner, you're not talking about a platform, you're talking about a model, right?
Yeah.
I don't really, would there ever be a winner from a model perspective? Because just again, there's endless possible use cases, and you might just have one model that performs better in a certain situation than others.
You can always tailor a model to be better at a certain use case than another, right? Depending on, it's all about the parameters you train it on, the data, the training set. So,
okay. Yeah. I think it's worth a view. Like there's some interesting questions asked here. I find it an interesting way to talk about it, because I don't know, again, this is just my perspective, right? Everything is so new and people are just trying to find their way. And if you throw something at me with, I'll make a stupid number up, 27 different technology terms in it, the sense of getting overwhelmed very quickly, to me, I'm just like, okay, great. What does all this mean? Like, how do I use this in my real life? Where do you start, right?
So what's useful out of that, right? What's actionable?
Yeah. So, and just if you're wondering, yes, I was Googling greenhouses, and obviously my ad blocking software is not working very well. You're not seeing the same
screen, but I guess we're seeing.
Seeing greenhouse ads for like I ever have space for one of those. But anyways, I liked this one. Changing gears, Finch. Mm-hmm. We talked about Finch. Last year.
This was after they acquired Fig, right?
Fig became Code Whisperer CLI. This is the tooling for Docker image management.
Right.
So I played around with this a little bit on my Mac, and it's interesting. You know, the integration with ECR, super easy. You can use the ECR credential helper. And I had it up and running, was able to build an image and push it off to ECR very quickly. I didn't really go any further with it than that. But at the time when it first came out, it was Windows only, or sorry, Mac OS only. And I just kind of wanted to see what it looked like on my Mac. So I played around with it for a bit and, you know, we've got sort of other ways that we do this. So I couldn't think of a practical use case for how I might use this as part of what we do for customers at that point in time. But this just caught my interest because it's now available on Windows as well. So a lightweight command line tool.
With seamless credential passing, it seems like.
Yeah.
So you don't have to set any of that up for like you would have to with a regular Docker image to access your AWS environment. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The credential, the ECR credential helper, I use that in our GitLab environments and on the runners and stuff. And that thing's a lifesaver, right? Without that, you've got to run those ECR login commands and stuff like that. I don't know if it's just the way I think about it. The install of the credential helper is really, I don't think you could make it any easier than it is. I do find actually getting the credential helper, and it's probably an RTFM situation where I'm skimming the documentation maybe a little too lightly and just saying, oh, how hard can this be? But I do know that with the credential helper for ECR, whether I think you're using Finch or anything else, it is a huge, huge time saver and just makes it easier, right?
And I don't think it's just you. I've had to walk some customers through that setup before as well. So,
yeah. Well, using credential helper or using...
Using credential helper, yeah.
Yeah. I find for me that the toughest part was always just getting... because I know in the... Is it... it's a JSON file that you edit, right? And I know in there, you can just say ECR login or you can put in the URLs that you get for your ECR repositories, registries. I always forget what they're called. But... sorting that out and getting it to work for multiple repositories, I found sometimes just made my head hurt a little bit. It's probably more user error than anything, but it's still way better than having to run those ECR login commands, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. I think if you're using containers at all, this is definitely a look, worth a look, whether you're running on Windows or Mac. I think it's just Windows and Mac right now. Yeah, and supports only Linux containers, Windows, and Mac. So there's that. I thought that was kind of neat. And this one, these weekly podcasts or these weekly whatever we call them, they tend to end up talking about AI a lot. And this came out just yesterday. It's Rufus, which is a conversational shopping experience. I was super excited about this. I'm still super excited about this, but I got to paragraph two. Launching today in beta to a small subset of customers in the mobile app will progressively roll out to additional US customers. My first thought was I'm opening up the mobile app and I'm gonna ask Rufus a couple questions and see what I get. But this is kind of cool, right? A shopping assistant trained on Amazon's product catalog. And from information across the web to answer your questions about your shopping needs.
Yeah, that's kind of where this is going. Yeah, I guess you can ask it specifically. You can tailor your search a lot easier.
Yeah, they give you some examples down here of questions you could ask. Where was it here?
Wonder how often they'll update it.
Yeah, shop by occasion or by a purpose. Learn what to look for while shopping for products. What's the difference between, you can ask it questions if you're confused about a product. I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So they're thinking like if you want to buy something, but you don't know what you want to buy kind of thing.
Yeah. Like this is a great question. Like I know like some of the times you just can get overwhelmed if you're not sure where to start. So, okay. You want to start an indoor garden. I guess the thing is you could spend some time in a search engine and read articles about it. But if you're an Amazon customer and you're going to buy something, then why not just ask right in the platform that you're going to use to purchase the product? You would think Amazon would have a lot of insight, right, into what to suggest.
It's kind of like going to the store and asking someone who works there who might be more familiar with the products.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Except it's not a person. It's a machine that's trained on the entire set of Amazon items and general internet knowledge, yeah. But
I thought it was kind of neat. So it'll be interesting to see how this rolls out over time. And you know what, to be honest, I think nowadays, I was talking to somebody about this the other week, the reviews, and I'm not saying this about Amazon reviews, I'm just saying about reviews in general, increasingly, I think there was a time where reviews were helpful. I think most reviews now are probably...
spots, probably.
Yeah, they're fake reviews in the first place.
Yeah.
One person says it's the best product they've ever bought. So, you know, a person bought that review. And then there's the exact opposite review that says this is the worst product I've ever had. So you're kind of left wondering what to do anyways, unless you have a personal recommendation. So maybe something like this could help with that as well. I think reviews are kind of done at this point.
It helps with the review problem, right? Because no one who had a good experience with the product or like a fine experience, like a 3-star experience, is going to go back and click 3 stars. It was okay.
You only get the extremes.
Yeah. If they're genuine, you might have someone come back and review it 5 stars. You probably won't. If they're terrible, you're more likely to get one. So
have you ever written a review? Just, we're totally off topic now, but have you ever submitted a review?
Not for something I've bought on an online shop.
No.
The only time I've ever really done that is for rideshare apps.
Rideshare?
Basically.
Oh, yeah.
They prompt you. They basically put it right in your face, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I've never written a review.
It's bidirectional on those apps. On this, you're just, if you want to, you can go and leave one. You don't even have to have bought the product, right? Can you just go and write one, or do you have to have bought it?
I don't know. I don't know. I would assume that there's probably, you'd think there's some sort of verification process. I don't know. What? The other thing that struck me about this is I only half joke that, you know, half of my laptop is the storage on my laptop. Half of it's used for different video conferencing tools. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I'm doing something, it's a different tool. To me, and again, I don't know, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but how many AI assistants are you going to end up with at some point, right? You know, because you can imagine now any other e-commerce site out there is like, oh man, we need our own AI reference tool now. So are you going to end up with, how many AI tools are you going to end up with? I guess every site's going to have their own AI.
I guess you could end up in a world where every application, like you have an AI assistant for every task you do, right? Or specific tasks. So
your own personal AI staff to help you get through your day and get your tasks done.
Until someone gets good enough or makes one that's good enough to do it all, right?
Yeah, which I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. If I would assume that you're kind of going to end up in a situation where you've got sort of, very similar to what we were talking about in the models, right? You'll have an AI assistant that's really good at X. So that becomes your sort of go-to tool for that. And then you've got some other thing and you go and use a different assistant for that. Maybe. I don't know.
But you can have like a one interaction point with like a subset of expert systems for various tasks, right?
Yeah.
So you could have like one endpoint and then it splits off into like spreadsheets or emailing or that kind of things like that.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how all this plays out. Like, I know it's literally, like, to use a phrase from Amazon, this is like day one. It's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out and all the interesting options we're going to have over the next probably even 12 months, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to happen quickly. That's for sure.
Yeah. Very cool. So those are the news articles that I kind of stumbled across this week. I thought we would change up the last two tabs here. And again, every week we tend to talk about this quite a lot. I literally found this as I was getting ready for the call. I don't know what I was doing. I think I actually clicked on a link to grab one of the articles and this popped up. So we've got AWS Generative AI Week 2024. 1 hour virtual sessions. From it starts on February 12th, goes to the 16th from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern time. And you can sign up for this now. And there is, it looks like a pretty decent agenda, especially because it's so early days, just getting in and learning about this stuff now so that you can have I'll call it an informed opinion is kind of the way that I'm trying to tackle this problem right now. I thought I'd share this because there's probably a good learning opportunity here to, if you're interested in figuring out more about this stuff.
For sure. Looks pretty compelling. I'm probably going to sign up.
Yeah, I'm going to. I ran out of time. I was actually, because we're talking about AI assistants, I was actually having a conversation with ChatGPT right before this.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm working away. I'm like, click, click, click. I'm, you know, trying to figure out the right way to ask a question for something. And the echo popped up and said, you got to be somewhere. And I was like, oops, or I would have registered for this. But it going along kind of nicely with what we just talked about, right? Picking the right foundation model, you know, getting data ready for Gen AI. Some good info here.
Yeah.
And we'll wrap up with a shameless self-promotion. Next week, is it next week? The 15th, February 15th, which is...
2 weeks.
2 weeks. We're going to do an introduction to identity and access management. I mentioned sort of in passing as we started this that we spend a lot of our time reviewing AWS accounts for customers. And I would, I don't know if you agree with this, I would say that 9 times out of 10, the biggest challenge that we see is just overlooked configuration choices in IAM. So I thought we could fire up a webinar. No need to register. We're going to do it in LinkedIn and Twitch like normal. So a couple weeks out, we'll do that.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have one more shameless self-plug as we wrap up. We're also going to bring back, now that we're through January, I got to get back into the Tuesday night thing on Twitch. So
great.
Along with this theme, we talked about it, I think last week we talked about this, that I'm going to try, is it called Q Business or Business Q? So there's the Amazon Q thing. And I've been doing some reading about it, and we can create a Q application and stuff like that. So there's no CloudFormation, as far as I can tell, for it yet. But Botto's been updated, so we've got API calls that we can make and everything. And I think on Tuesday, I'm going to take a run at going through and creating a Q Business application.
Okay.
I don't know what the heck it'll do.
That'll be exciting.
but it kind of goes along with how many AI assistants are you going to have? Well, let's create one. I don't know what it'll do, but we'll business start that. It'll do business things. We can make a movie recommendation business application. We can ask it for what is the best Nicolas Cage movie that we should watch this Friday. So I'll do that starting Tuesday, 7 p.m. We'll get that going again. So the extended break over January is done. We'll get back into the groove of writing some code, maybe well, maybe poorly, on Tuesday nights.
Excellent.
And I see Kevin here. Hey, Kevin, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin.
Anything else that you were thinking about that you wanted to mention, or is that the show for the week?
I think that's the show for the week.
All right. Perfect. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. Pretty much this is turning into a Gen AI conversation every Friday now, it seems.
Really?
And we will see you back next Friday. Hopefully we'll see you before then, maybe on Tuesday night, but we'll see you on Friday and we'll talk about more AWS news for the week. So enjoy your weekends and bye for now.